Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
No one leaves this room until you explain to me what in God's name you were thinking.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episodes 32 and 33, Who's Afraid of Amanda Woodward, Parts 1 and 2. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
We made
Guys,
it!
We did it!
Oh
we did it. I mean, not yet. I'm going to knock some wood because this is a long one and it's not over yet and much of it doesn't make sense. And I might have a stroke yelling about how crazy it is. Speaking of crazy, first of all, it is crazy, Patreon supporters, how much we appreciate you.
That's right.
And our next episode of Again With This, episode 119, which drops November 11th, let's watch Alyssa Milano and Denise Dowse, sort of, in the series finale of Charmed. That doesn't really make sense either. We didn't have a ton of luck untangling the plot, but that really wasn't the point.
No.
We hope you will join us. We could not make this podcast or that podcast without the support of our Patreons. And we hope that if you are not among their number, you will be soon.
Yes.
Come on by. We have a good time.
Patreon.com/againwiththis. And that episode is, of course, season 8, episode 22, Forever Charmed. It is streaming on Peacock. So if you are one of the few, the proud, the Peacock havers, you can watch that in advance and prepare for our discussion of same. Speaking of discussions, let's start discussing this monster of an episode, a big two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with our D plot, Chelsea's custody is back up for grabs. Chelsea is living her and my best life, sitting on a bed in Denise's hotel suite, watching TV, eating room service. We find out she is, in fact, watching Twister, even better, when Matt calls. When he asks, she admits she's a little nervous about the hearing tomorrow and hangs up when she hears Denise come in, but then comes out to see Denise nearly already passed out on the bed in the next room, having brought home some dude who thinks Denise's daughter's name is Kelsey. And instead of asking the guy to leave before he sexually assaults a woman who is incapable of consent, Chelsea just returns to her own adjoining room. And then things get even more worrisome. Clip 2.
Wow, it's a big rush. Your mom wouldn't mind us talking. We're old friends from Europe. I'm Dex. Hasn't she mentioned me? She gave me a call today and we had some drinks. Has anyone ever told you how pretty you are?
Oh boy.
Is that Europe, Bergen County, New Jersey? Okay, Dennis.
Yeah.
Is Europe a bar in Ventura?
Mm-hmm. Starting to get a sense of what Matt meant when he said Denise was a real free spirit when he knew her in the past, because Dex might be short for something other than Dexter.
Pretty just free saying. With these spirits.
Yeah. Yeah. So when Dex gropes her inner thigh, Chelsea leaps up and runs back to Denise, who is still too out of it to do anything. And at this point, I support Chelsea doing what she does, which is leave the irresponsible adult to her own devices for now. Grab her bag, take off. I hope she stops at the desk on her way out to Matt's to send someone up to get that dude out of the room. That doesn't happen that we see, but who's to say? Because then we're at Matt's as Chelsea falls into his arms and lies that she just wanted to stay with him tonight and Denise put her in a cab. Sweetie, you had a whole ride to come up with a story Matt might believe. In no way is he going to buy that Denise voluntarily gave up any of her time with you to him, but he simply asks whether Chelsea and Denise had a fight or something and she basically confirms it by saying it doesn't matter. And then we're in court. And by the way, court on this whole proceeding. Because, I mean, we're going to see they have essentially three witnesses and somehow it takes multiple days to get through all of it. But all right. So Matt is about to take the stand when Denise hisses at Chelsea about what she told Matt the night before. Chelsea says Denise shouldn't worry. Denise defensively babbles that she doesn't know what she was thinking with that guy. It was a one-time thing. And Chelsea tersely tells her again, don't worry about it. Obviously, Denise's lawyer goes straight to the most scandalous facts. Matt was arrested for solicitation. He has been treated for drug abuse. He is a homosexual. And when Matt's lawyer objects, the judge says anything's on the table at a custody hearing, but that Matt doesn't have to answer. Matt confirms he is gay and says it doesn't affect his ability to raise a child. But didn't a male friend recently sleep at Matt's place with Matt while Chelsea was also in the residence? Which, first of all, it would be okay, even in long ago, for that to be the case, I feel. But, you know, obviously Matt then has to explain it was not sexual and wonders aloud where Denise's lawyer even got this information. And noticing that Chelsea seems uncomfortable about her snitching, Denise reminds her that she knew all along what that snitch diary was for. And when Matt makes eye contact with her, Chelsea runs out of the courtroom in shame. And then this custody hearing is dragging into a second day. Matt's mother, by the way, still nowhere to be seen. That last fight she had with Matt was the last time she's been in the show, which is crazy to me. She would at least be in the gallery, if not like a witness in Denise's defense, if her whole thing was Matt can't raise a child because he's gay.
Just one of many instances in this season finale in which it was like, you had 1,478 episodes to set this shit up properly, right, including your budget for guest stars,
right,
and you didn't fucking do it. So now we're in this like, and Poochie went back to his home planet situation with literally every fucking subplot. Lather, rinse, repeat. Anyway, please continue.
So Chelsea's on the stand getting questioned by Denise's lawyer. She admits that before her father's death, she had spent very little time with Matt. She claims she has forgiven Denise for leaving her. But when the lawyer asks whether there's any reason Denise wouldn't make a great mother, other than the first 10 plus years of Chelsea's life, I guess, a crestfallen Chelsea takes a long pause. And the lawyer cheerfully pretends to take that to mean she can't think of a reason and sits. And then Chelsea tells the court about Denise's gentleman caller. Denise blurts that none of that is true, but Chelsea refuses to take it back. And the judge tells her she did the right thing and then adjourns for the day. And Matt's lawyer says this, clip 3.
Tune in when you get the kid.
Way to take this seriously, ma'am.
Wow.
What?
Jesus.
This is a legal proceeding. No wagering, yeah, please.
Not a raffle, but anyway.
And then it's the next day, and the judge rules. Clip 4.
You need strong parental guidance. And while I do believe that your mother and you have things to work out, I'd like to be the one to give you that chance. Therefore, I'm ruling in favor of the child's real mother, Denise Fielding.
Well, way to put it in the grossest possible way.
Mm-hmm. Good job, court.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he could have said sodomite or something. He didn't, but anyway.
Oh, Jesus. So
Matt's lawyer doesn't understand it, but Matt does. Biological parent trumps gay man. And then we're at Matt's place as he helps a shame-faced Chelsea gather her things to move out. She's really sad about how things worked out and she's going to miss him. And as they both cry, Matt bravely says Chelsea's going to have a great time in Europe with Denise. All evidence to the contrary. But then as soon as Chelsea takes off to collect herself, Denise calls and asks Matt to come meet her in a parking lot where Denise says she was up all night. Not in the parking lot, just that's where she says it.
She also says that it was around the corner and he drives there.
He drives there, yes. I noted that as well.
Like, I know it's LA, but guys.
Yeah. Denise says that Matt's testimony made her realize biology and wanting it were not enough to make her a decent parent, and she has to do what's right for Chelsea. And Matt angrily says she needs to talk to Chelsea. And Denise says she used to write Chelsea letters all the time but never sent them, but she has one now for Matt to pass on because she can't face Chelsea. And I am begging everyone not to leave this custody issue legally unsettled. All you idiots just went through a whole court process. What reason is there really to think that Denise won't change her mind and come back to challenge Matt's custody later. It's not going to come up because Matt's going to leave the show in the next season premiere. Spoiler. But Matt is nice and tells Denise she's being courageous in doing this. And that's it for them for season 5. What a way to jerk a bunch of people around. But it's all over now.
Again, I was like looking at something else yesterday or the day before and slacked to Tara that was like, Chelsea has been here a third of the season.
That's crazy to me.
And this is the literal slap, literal dash way that they're wrapping this up. Except, like, only to be outdone by his actual exit in the next episode, but we will get to it and also spoiler.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we had to sit through all of these scenes of Denise being like, I love you now and you're everything to me and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end is just like, yeah, you take her. I'll see you later. Like, just because she's too embarrassed. Give me a break. It's so bad.
Yeah.
Speaking of so bad, our C plot. It's Sam's turn to go to jail. Billy gets back from a casual jog. No reason to change his regular routine just because the cops were going to arrest his girlfriend's dad last night. And he never actually heard what happened with that when he sees the apartment doors wide open and inside finds cops with a search warrant, which is how he finds out Jim did not, in fact, get arrested at Lise Fashion's alley. But now Sam is getting arrested because the cops assume that she tipped Jim off. And Billy tries to throw his weight around in clip 5.
Hey, if you're arresting her, you're going to arrest me too, okay?
Why, Billy? You haven't done anything. Sam's the one who let us on the wild goose chase.
Look, Jim's no idiot. He probably figured it out. He saw you coming.
Well, grasp at all the straws you want. The fact is, that girl lied to you. And I bet it wasn't the first time either. Get your girlfriend an attorney, son. She's going to need one.
I hate to agree with Billy, but he is right. Somehow, as bad as Jim is at fugitiving, he's better at doing that than the cops are at copping, based on the evidence of this plot line, which is insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we see Billy next, Detective Stevenson is queuing up a videotape of Sam's interrogation. Sarah, you're a crime expert. Why would he show this to Billy under any circumstances, never mind when Billy himself has also been under suspicion of committing the same crime that Sam has been charged with?
And also, why was it shot from this weird angle so that she could flop all around on the interrogation table, which has got to be the fucking germiest place in Los Angeles?
Yeah, yes.
Wearing a suede shirt coat that she wasn't wearing when she got pinched in May in LA. I mean, all of it is insane, and at no point are our suspicions about what Jim was actually, you know, in jail for and why he couldn't stay there unless he was an ad seg. None of this gets addressed.
No, it doesn't. Anyway, this is why you don't talk to cops without a lawyer. Clip 6.
No, I didn't want him to go back into jail. I didn't think that I had any choice.
But it hurt turning him in that way.
Billy kept saying that I had to, and I was scared, okay?
You love your father, don't you? You warned him we were coming.
Yes! No, I mean, yes, I loved him. Not yes that I warned him.
She was scared, and she was tired.
I'll let Sam out this second if you agree to help us. She'll be kept under surveillance. We'll tap your phone. But most importantly, you'll be asking some subtle questions.
You want me to spy on my girlfriend?
Well, if you want her to get out of jail anytime soon, you don't have a choice.
Yeah, I do. And I'm making it. Take your offer and shove it.
All right, your choice.
I mean, and in what universe is Billy not like, please let me help you?
Yeah.
At this point, Jim is disgusting.
Jim is disgusting. Sam is cooperating. Like, I don't understand what he thinks he's doing by stonewalling.
Yeah.
Also, the cop told you to get a lawyer. That was your one job. Why didn't you do it? Instead of putting her in this position to be so stupid about all of this.
Because they gave all their money to Jim and now they can't afford an attorney?
Okay,
I don't.
Fair. Right.
I mean, nobody in the writer's room thought about this. Mm-hmm. It was just like, oh, okay, all of these plots that have been in neutral for 2.5 months.
Yes.
Let's just drop it and drive and step on the gas. Like, okay.
Yeah.
That's how people get killed. We'll get to it.
Well, we're about to find out that that last scene was just wheel spinning as well, because the next day, Billy returns to Detective Stevens's office to agree to spy on Sam after all. And if Billy tells Sam what's happening, they'll both end up in jail. So this is going to be a real test of Billy's acting skills, question mark, I guess.
LOL. Also, how will they know if he tips her off?
Right. The house isn't bugged. The phone is bugged. Yeah. Just don't tell her on the phone. Anyway, when Billy gets home that night, Sam joins the proud Starverse tradition of sneaking up behind someone who has had very good reason to be jumpy of late. They let her out of jail, out of the blue. Even her attorney, of whose existence we have seen no evidence, couldn't believe it. And all the cops were being so nice to her all of a sudden. Clip 7.
Detective Stevenson even drove me home. It's like they believe me, you know, that I didn't tell Dad that they were coming. You believe me, don't you? You're being so quiet.
I just couldn't get a word in. Of course I believe you.
Oh, that's all that matters then.
Okay, got it.
I hate the same character so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's so annoying, and I think has, like, long COVID brain damage or something. Like, she's just... this whole plot is icky, and as previously mentioned, like, it took forever to get to this point, and now it is going 78 miles an hour, like, probably so that we don't notice all the giant holes in it.
Yes.
Except I noticed some.
Well, especially if the new thing is now Billy thinks that she is in cahoots with Jim, in which case, like, you don't have to try to put her in jail also if that's what you think. You can just break up with her. You know what I mean? Like, if this is why he's snitching on her, essentially, it really is not consistent with his character.
No. And, I mean, maybe, ironically, this is, like, because it's hard to tell what Andrew Hsu thinks he's doing, like, that opacity
indeed,
is the positive way to put it,
yes,
is maybe good for this plot line, except that the plot line is just, you know, garbage. So
absolutely. So I feel like Billy's supposed to be conflicted as Sam plants little smooches all over his face, but Andrew Hsu can't help liking it, as you can see in the visual aids. Sam wants to go to bed. Billy goes to the window first to exchange a significant look with Detective Stevenson before locking up, and I guess Detective Stevenson is counting on none of Sam's neighbors liking her enough to tell her that the obvious cop was obviously loitering in the courtyard after he dropped her off, and it turns out he's right. They all apparently think Sam is annoying as well. So, the next morning, Billy and Sam are naked and kissing in bed, Sam gloating that they are back on track, which... are they? I don't think her charges were dropped and her dad is still at large, but this is Billy's cue to do some spying. Clip 8.
So you really think your dad's out of town? He made such a big deal about not going anywhere without you. It seems weird that he's just vanished. He hasn't tried to contact you.
Of course not. Don't you think if he had, I would have said something?
Something doesn't add up. Are you sure when you turned him in, you gave him the exact time and place?
God, listen to you.
This is a lot of unanswered questions, honey.
Well, that doesn't mean that I have the answers.
If you don't, then who does?
Stop it, okay? You're sounding like the cops.
I didn't mean to imply anything. I just...
Imply? No, I think that was an accusation.
Which is warranted because you've been a sketchball about this from the jump.
Yes.
Not that it's your fault, it's the writer's, but still.
Well, yes. And this is also the suspicion that Detective Stevenson planted in his head when he arrested her, which was, she may be lying to you and it's probably not the first time, which even made stupid Billy be like, oh yeah, she has lied to me a lot. Anyway,
Jesus.
Billy has just gone through a career change, which we will get to, before we see him back at home as the phone rings with a call from Jim. Sam snaps her fingers at Billy to send him to pick up the extension. Judging by the music, Jim is either in Mexico or at one of Los Angeles's many Mexican-themed bars. At this point, we don't know yet. Clip 9.
Well, you did it to me again, didn't you, girl? Turned in your old man.
I didn't know what else to do. You were talking crazy talk.
Yeah, well, you can relax now. You and that weak-kneed little boyfriend of yours. I just called to say adios.
If only. If only. This actor is so bad. This plot line is so maddening. And, oh good, it's the big CD of racist music cues. We haven't hung out with that one since Brenda and Dylan got stuck at the border.
Mm-hmm. When they have hung up, Billy can't stop himself muttering that Sam did tell the truth, thank God. And Sam is like, I thought you always believed that. But they can't fight about it now because Detective Stevenson is there to announce that they traced Jim's call to Ensenada again. Why is this information either of them needs right now? Sam is appalled that the cops tap their phone, but Detective Stevenson tells her that call just got her off the hook, and then decides to fuck his cooperating witness before they leave by thanking Billy.
No.
Whereupon Sam confronts him about all his lying and wonders if Jim was right about Billy and his weak knees. And if Sam believes that, she can get on the next plane and go live with Jim then, says Billy. She's probably so sad he's gone. And Sam says she is. And is that so hard for Billy to understand? And Billy and the rest of us are like, yeah, yes. Actually, it is.
In point of fact, yes, we are having a little difficulty with this giant poof clown.
Yeah.
Oh my God, guys, go to the visual aids, please. His hair.
Yes.
Oh, God. It's like Roy from Siegfried and Roy, RIP. Anyway.
Yes. I mean, if they had established that she's acting this way because she is an adult survivor of child abuse and her feelings are all snarled up with that, okay, yes, we would get that. But that has not been established except substantially. So, and even if that were the case, get help and work through that. But anyway, Billy just wants to get back to what they had. Sam says that was just a fantasy and now it's over. And she's going to go sleep at Sydney's? The last time we saw you two together, you were gloating that she got her store shut down. But okay, I guess.
Yeah, you hate each other. She would not let you in.
No, she would not. On another day. Sam is loitering the laundry room when Billy comes down to say there's no excuse for what he did and no apology will ever be enough, but he doesn't want to quit on their relationship. And he wrote a list of reasons why he loves her. It's a stupid list, so I wasn't going to repeat any of it. But then, clip 10.
La-la-la-di-da thing that you do.
That's not it! It's la-la-la-da!
And whatever it is, it sucks.
Yes. It's not cute.
It sucks.
It's not cute.
No, it's not cute. None of this is cute.
But also pay attention. Which one of you got the line wrong? Anyway, the last one is somehow both loyalty and how Sam cares about people. She doesn't respond to any of this except to silently cry and then rushes out saying she has to get to work and maybe make a list of her own. But that might have to wait. Because when we see her next, she is mid-shift and Jim's at her cash, demanding that she empty the register because they'll need the money for their trip. Okay, so that means he was in Mexico. He sent the cops there before crossing the border again to come back and get her and return to Mexico.
Having escaped from prison in Maryland.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having evaded apprehension for several months at this point.
I mean, I'm not going to be out here saying that this is impossible given the current state of policing in these United States.
Sure.
But him?
Yeah. with no resources. Like, as we've said, it would be another thing if, like, when he's alluded to, like, I have money coming from here or there or whatever. If that were true and he did have connections to something else that was supporting him, it would be different. But they, like, just dropped that and then forgot about it and never established it. So all of this is supposed to be his own ingenuity. Like, what?
And I couldn't believe, I mean, I could believe it, obviously, but, like, you know that chase scene in Raising Arizona where there's that, like, cut from the ground up to this guy, like, reloading the shotgun with shells and, like, Nicolas Cage with the panty on his head and, like, the legs flying? Well, this guy is just shooting down the length of a supermarket aisle and all these dogs. I was like, oh my God, I wish that they would just smash cut to something like that. Because this is so dumb.
It's so preposterous.
Like, just turn it into a farce. Fuck it.
Yeah.
You already kind of did, except it's boring instead of fun.
Right. So he grabs her arm, of course, and as she tries to resist, he jostles her around for a while before pulling a gun, which another customer sees and screams at. And Jim takes Sam as a hostage and throws a bag for the other cashiers to fill. This is such an unsecured location. People have cell phones now in the show's timeline. Like, what is this guy's plan for real? From here, they cross over into the A-plot, so we'll see them again in a while. But wow. That was a lot to take in.
Yeah. And the tonal whiplash and stupidity slash horrible pacing planning does not improve from here.
Oh,
spoiler.
No. On to our B plot. Megan gets dragged into Michael and Taylor's scheme against Peter. Lisa Rinna starts this plot line, impressing us all with her matching bra and underwear set before Taylor crawls into bed with an uninterested sleeping Peter. He ignores her until the phone rings. It's Dr. Shulman looking for him, because he's an hour late to a staff meeting. Taylor does not pass on the message, trying to keep Peter pinned under her, even as he feebly tries to slap her hands away and then looks at the clock, blames her for not setting the alarm, and complains about her lingerie, which is also against the rules. It is a baby pink lace bra. Most of her butt is even covered. It's not even a thong. Like, did Beth wear floor-length flannel nighties or what? Even this is not okay? Jeez.
Yeah. And also, did you look at her butt?
Yeah.
Look at her butt. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
The boobs as well. Not bad.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, he's not done. Stopping on his way to get a pill to rant some more, clip 11.
You know what really makes me sick is that cheap perfume that you wear in these trashy outfits. Just do me a favor and get rid of both of them.
Trashy outfits.
Yeah, it's some kind of rash from peeing in the bushes.
You never get me, Kappa. You never get me, see?
Another thing. Yeah.
Listen. You know what your problem is? Well, so your butt, I can say that much.
That is a fact.
You use profane words. Queen of the hobby.
She never cooks. She never cleans. She keeps a filthy house. Then Taylor shows up at the practice to talk to Michael, and he gets hysterical, reminding her that they can't be seen together. But she made sure Peter and Megan were gone before coming up to say Michael was right. They need to ruin Peter's life even more by going public with the story that he's been physically abusing her. Michael can't because of doctor-patient personality. No, confidentiality, not personality. Taylor can't because Peter will kill her, which possibly true, but why do you want to salvage this relationship? Anyway, Michael knows all this.
Also, phrase it like the way that all of this is pitched is like the Benny Hill music should be playing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're framing someone for intimate partner violence. This is not funny.
Right.
And Thomas Glabro, to his credit, I guess, is trying to just brazen it out in his usual Michael, I can only be me. Smug, like, he's hilarious, but, like, that hilarious is not called for here. And also, why is there 78 episodes of plot in this one episode when it's been dragging on?
Yeah, there's more to this too, but we'll get to it. So Michael knows all of this and says they need to find a third party, and that's when Megan bursts back in behind him. Clip 12.
You lying pig. No, I knew this would happen the minute I turned my back.
No, it's not what it appears.
Don't deny it, okay? I saw you two at Shooters. Jennifer said she saw you at Kyle's.
You couldn't be further from the truth here.
You shut up.
Hey.
Yeah, Taylor. Please, please, Taylor, will you just leave, okay? I'll explain everything to her. Come on, go. Oh. Look, Taylor and I are not having an affair, okay? I would have explained everything to you if I could have, but Taylor swore me to secrecy.
I swear to God, if you tell me that she has a brain tumor...
No, 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 it's nothing like that. It's her relationship with Peter. You know, I really shouldn't be telling you any of this.
Well, you know what? If you don't, I'm going to strangle you to death with my bare hands. All
right. Okay, so...
Again, phrasing.
Yes. And that's how you volunteer to be a patsy. Michael tells her the whole cover story. Obviously, she is horrified and wants Michael to take action on Taylor's behalf. He says again that he can't for Taylor's safety and the sake of the practice and Peter's career generally, and because Taylor begged him. Megan doesn't want to keep the secret, but Michael says it's not for him, it's for Peter. And reluctantly, Megan agrees to keep it quiet for now. And the next time we see them, they're at a hospital charity event. Peter asks if they've seen Taylor, Megan quickly excusing herself when she gets within 5 feet of Peter. And then a server brings Michael a note, and he goes out in the hall to meet Taylor, looking like her old self again, except more so, I believe I said in the visual aids caption, ladies and gentlemen, Tina Turner, and I stand by that.
Oh, my God. That was an absolute, like, 5'9 with the afro from Flesh moment. Her hair is... so big.
It's
her
so
dress
big.
Is so small.
Yes.
This is not a complaint. I'm just saying. And every time it was like, oh my God, like, what is she wearing under that? Like,
yes,
that is a tunic. Good for her.
I hope it's a romper and like it has a crotch built in to keep it over her butt because it's so short.
Yeah.
You must go to the visual aids and see this. She's also wearing stripper heels as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
All of this is obviously purposeful to provoke Peter into a meltdown for Megan to witness. So Michael says that Taylor looks perfect. Apparently, Taylor also begged Megan off screen not to report Peter's abuse. So now she's worried they laid it on too thick. Clip 13.
So this is classic reverse psychology. Look, Megan has been questioning everything I do these days. She's convinced I do everything underhandedly. Which, of course, is true. But conversely, she's determined to take the high road. This virtually guarantees that she blows her whistle on Peter. Now go in there and make him nuts. I'll make sure Megan sees it all.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce our chief of staff,
you know, Michael,
Dr. Peter
I shouldn't
Burns.
Be enjoying this, but I am. I think I have a real talent for it.
Yeah, it's just the ability to stir up trouble. It's a gift.
I mean...
Yeah.
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 Like, I don't hate them working together, and I don't, like, sort of separated from what they're trying to do. I don't hate this
yes.
tone. Like, just, you know, who cares? Like, make it fizzy. You know you're on a soap. Mm-hmm. Fuck it.
Yeah.
But then this is weird. Ugh.
It is. So Peter has just started speaking when Taylor and her very indecent look strut in, smugly sit right in his eye line. So as soon as he's finished, he heads straight for her and grabs her by, what else, the arm, to pull her into a corner and tell her some shit, which includes accusing her of deliberately trying to embarrass him. She spits, this is who she is, and it's tough shit if he doesn't like it. And he has just called her a two-bit whore when Megan tries to yank Peter away from Taylor. Michael, in turn, yanking Megan away and ordering her not to make a scene.
It's like the Busby Berkeley film of arm grabbing.
Well, I was going to say the human armipede, but yes, either way.
Oh, I mean, ooh, but also, yes, you're correct.
So Peter, unconcerned, orders Michael to get a handle on his wife, not noticing he is the one making a scene by dragging Taylor through the ballroom by her arm, past, among others, Dr. Shulman, who asks Michael if Peter's always this rough on his girlfriends. Michael shrugs that you hear things, but who really knows? They just have to hope Peter never crosses the line. And Dr. Shulman's like, mm-hmm. And Michael's like, yay. Silently. The next morning, Michael's simultaneously trying to fuck Megan and continue manipulating her into spilling the beans about Peter. He is definitely successful on the latter as she states that she's seriously considering going to the authorities. And Michael pretends to fly off the handle about it. but then says the hospital has a diversion program for doctors in crisis, which Dr. Shulman runs. Michael would call her, but, you know, confidentiality. And Megan's like, wink, I'll call her on my way to work. And then we're at the hospital as Peter overhears Dr. Shulman thanking Megan for coming forward because these problems don't go away on their own. He tries to take off, but she catches up with him to repeat what Megan said and basically not even try to pretend she isn't giddy about taking him down, even though, to her knowledge, she is doing it due to another woman's pain. And Peter does not deny Megan's description in clip 14.
Irene, you've got to understand, it's not like I'm just some nutcase.
I don't know. It sounds pretty nutty to me.
It's a medical condition. It's rare. I know that you've heard of it. Rage epilepsy. I've been taking medication for 2 weeks now.
Really? And last night's manhandling of your girlfriend, what was that? You just forgot to take your pills? Doctor, I'm calling a meeting for tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., at which time you will be officially relieved of your duties as chief of staff.
You can't do this.
Actually, Peter, I could do a lot worse. But just getting you out of that office will have to suffice. You have yourself a good day, Doctor, if that's possible.
Oh, no. Not called back to the sink and paper towel dispenser room for a very serious meeting. Just kidding. They don't actually make it to that fake conference room again. So Peter then storms into the practice to yell at Megan because, you know, of what we just heard, which is when Michael appears to pull Peter away and deny that he told Megan anything, claiming she snooped in his shit. Michael goes on to whine that he feels totally responsible for Peter's firing. But wait, what if Peter resigns before Dr. Shulman fires him and then appoints Michael as his successor, temporarily, of course? After Peter goes through the program and figures his shit out, Michael will give him his job back. He'll even put it in writing, which I don't know why a resigning chief of staff would get to pick his own successor, by the way. It's not like vice president or something.
No.
Peter says he loves this job, which, since when? Seems like he blew it off most of the time, other than when he had to give speeches at charity events. But Michael says Peter can either hand the job off to him or to the she-wolf. And Peter has a lot to think about, and Michael silently celebrates. So Peter gets home to Taylor dozing on the deck. Clip 15.
I'm sorry about the clothes, or lack thereof. I was going to change.
Clothes are fine, Taylor. You wear whatever you want, huh? This game is, this game's over. Rock bottom! That's a great term, isn't it? I mean, it sort of describes the condition perfectly.
Okay.
Shatnerosis? That condition?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
If you only have 1 hour's worth of material, you can just do a 1 hour finale. You don't have to pad it out like this, like you have a word count you're trying to hit.
Yeah, that's exactly how this felt. Like, you know, save, change to career font. Oh, yeah.
So Peter tells Taylor everything that happened and then notes she's the only one who stood by him through everything, and she promises they'll get through it together. And when he lunges into her arms, she looks very smug. And the next day, Michael tells Dr. Shulman about the whole successor gambit. She obviously knows Michael is behind everything, and when she asks if Peter even has a problem, he shrugs that it's immaterial at this point, which, again, he was violent with Taylor in private before this scheme happened. Like, I think we're supposed to think whatever Michael prescribed for him is making him even more irritable. But he already had these tendencies to begin with. This is why this was a credible plan.
Yeah.
So it's not immaterial. You just made him worse than he was before. I mean, arguably. But anyway, Dr. Shulman says she's opening an investigation into Michael, who counters that she won't have time once he appoints her chief of neurology, which immediately shuts her up and also just leads to a bunch more questions, which is, if she's not already a chief of something, why would she be in a position to fire Peter? Yeah, but anyway.
What? And like that she rolls over in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy shoved her out of the chief of staff job.
Yes.
I'd be more interested in vengeance if I were her, but okay.
And back to the violence question, as we will recall, he like physically intimidated her in the women's locker room when she was standing there in her bra. You know, like she's got her own stories to tell.
Yeah. Also, she's supposed to be the head of this diversion program.
Right.
Which presumably is not just for the abuser's benefits, but mm-hmm. I guess we know how that works or doesn't.
Yeah. The medical board in California is very mysterious, as portrayed on this show, as we've mm-hmm. discussed many times. So as Dr. Shulman is wandering off smiling, Megan appears and Michael tells her about his new job, clip 16.
Peter must be so grateful for all of your help. This is wonderful. Look, I know you've been waiting for this chance. Look, aren't you glad you did it on your own, honestly, without an ounce of manipulation?
You know, I must say, the honesty part was the best part.
I mean, Calabro. Bless and keep him.
Indeed. But also, Megan, how do you dress yourself in the morning being this
really? Like, oh my God. Truly. Like, and you're out without your helmet? What are you doing?
Yeah. At the hospital the next day, a neurologist named Dr. Visconti, not our old friend, Dr. Howard Stein, catches up to Peter in the hall. First of all, he is played by Markel Taylor, who was also the manager at the Bellage, who kicked Val out of her suite for non-payment of bills. Second, he ran another EEG and has definitively ruled out rage epilepsy. And as Peter protests, saying Michael ran the original test, he realizes how he got played. Back at the condo, Peter's still trying to determine exactly how he got fucked over and intensely asks Taylor to describe to him what he did during his blackouts. And she's kind of vague. He doesn't seem satisfied, although he does dismiss her suggestion that the second test was wrong. And we get this, clip 17.
But mostly it was just, you know, crazy talking bad language.
Relatable.
Relatable. The most relatable.
So Peter says he wants to take a walk and clear his head. He invites her to go with him, and she says no, but it's so that as soon as he's gone, she can dart to the phone and tell Michael the latest. Also, Peter did not go for a walk. He went around the corner to eavesdrop. Pretty big gamble that she would pass up the chance to spend any pleasant time with him, but I guess he does know her pretty well. And after dark, Michael and Megan creep into the practice to find Peter in Michael's office, having found the fake test results. And as Peter resets the plot line for the new viewers who walked in halfway through the episode, Megan looks appropriately disturbed. And when she asks whether any of what Peter accused Michael of doing is true, Michael can't deny it. He tries to get Peter to talk about everything, but Peter would rather punch Michael instead than throw him through the glass and halfway into reception. And Michael's hands seem to take the worst of it. And since he is a surgeon, that's not great. Though they don't lean on that as much in the rest of the episode as I kind of expected.
Yeah, like not at all. Mm-hmm. Aside from like having him in these giant gauze like
mittens,
baseball sliding pad mittens. Yeah. But okay.
So then Taylor's leaving her little shift at Kyle's when Peter calls out to her in the parking lot. He thought he would surprise her. She wants to know how his first therapy session was tonight. Well, she'll never believe what the doctor suggested, that he whisk Taylor away for a romantic weekend. He won't take no for an answer. The next day, Michael's in a hospital bed, both hands in the mittens we just described. As Megan says, Peter and Taylor have disappeared. Megan's already filed a police report about Peter attacking Michael and why Peter would be out for revenge against Taylor. And asks, does Michael have any idea how many lives he has ruined? Clip 18.
Well, it's just a case of never thinking I'd get caught.
I mean, also, Megan, you are not new here. Like, you're at the center of a scheme directed at him that he then, like, scheme flipped.
Yeah.
I don't feel sorry for you. Figure it out.
At a certain point, it's like, he's a scorpion, and you mm-hmm. knew that when you married him. You knew it, in fact, before you met him, so.
Mm-hmm.
And as for Michael, I just can't stay mad at him. He's a sociopath, but God bless, as you said. Megan calls Michael sick and yells that he probably doesn't even realize how fucked up his scheme was and would do it again. He claims to be sorry. We all know he's not. She's sorry she ever met him. And then Peter has brought Taylor to the top of a tower on what I believe is Catalina Island. She doesn't have a care in the world because she can't hear the menacing score. And then this happens, clip 19.
I feel like we're on the verge of a real breakthrough, Peter.
Yeah, me too.
We'll just erase everything that's happened in the past months. We'll make this our honeymoon.
A day we'll never forget.
Not to put pressure on you when you already have so much, but I need to tell you something. It's the most incredible news. Peter, I'm pregnant.
I'm pregnant with your child.
Well, I hope it's his child and not, you know, a goat. But first of all, you're right. That is incredible. I don't believe it.
No.
Second of all, again, go to the visual aids. You could see the peas that she is smuggling from the wide shot. It is far away. It is very far away.
Yes. Well, if this aired in May, they probably shot it in like March, and it was cold. I'm just saying, in her defense, it was cold. No defense for the wardrobe department that didn't put something in her brassiere or top, if no brassiere.
Yeah, or get her a shrug. Those were in then, right?
Something, yes. But yeah, the idea that this is now the second member of this medical practice who was about to push his partner to her death until she made a shocking announcement. It's very funny. And that's it for the B-plot.
La 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 da.
Finally, our A-plot. This is a monster. Big changes are afoot at Shooters and D&D.
Oh, God.
Sydney comes out her front door in a cute robe, some actually crazy looking sunflower slippers. They really just look like flip-flops that someone covered in like fake flowers from Michaels. They are so weird looking.
I mean, they're cute. I'm sort of into it from a Sydney's like consistent fashion this season perspective, but they look super uncomfortable. Like they're obviously plastic. Yeah, from the Christmas shop. Like, ow.
So when she grabs her paper, Craig basically pounces on her and exposits that she has blown him off since she ditched him at the jazz club. He says that Amanda's drunk ass is a joke, which is when the joke herself comes out and gives Craig the chance to prove she does not mean anything to him or him to her. Clip 20.
Amanda!
Kiss my butt.
Queen.
So Craig gives Sydney a rose and she pulls him inside. At the office later, Amanda is pitching a $15 million campaign to a Mr. Kroger. Clip 21.
And the piece de resistance.
Ooh, fancy.
Sorry to make you listen to that again. The piece de resistance.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Adios. Mr. Kroger notes that the same campaign last year cost $10 million. Amanda says his profits increased 24%, which should not mean their quote goes up 50% in a year. But as Amanda is defending this gouging, Sydney whispers something in Craig's ear. And when he takes Mr. Kroger's side, Sydney backs him up, standing to say that Amanda's figures are grossly inflated. Sydney is clearly wrong, but let the client negotiate it himself? And if Craig's concern with Sydney's lawsuit was that he doesn't want the agency to fold and lose his job, then surely he also doesn't want someone inside the organization driving business away? Like, what?
Well, also, maybe put the sub in subterfuge.
Yeah. This really seems like, and we're about to see, a plot that they came up with on the fly and like just did not discuss ahead of time. Not that it makes any more sense or that we would imagine it would make more sense if they had had more time to craft it.
They had a fucking century to craft it, Tara. This is episode 180.
No. Like, I don't mean the writers. I mean Craig and Sydney.
Oh, well, but this is what I mean. This is what is so maddening about this. Like, this is just hurtling through what would take 8 or 9 months to unwind in like 18 hours. And it's like, well, you know, but it's a soap and they didn't have time to set it up. Like, this is the maddening part to me is that all they were doing was setting shit up, but it like wasn't this exactly. And then this is just like speeding through. I mean, like, whatever. I get it, but I don't like it.
No. So Craig announces they'll get back to Mr. Kroger with new figures. And after he has left, Amanda obviously shuts everyone in the conference room to lose her shit on them. And Sydney's response is not great. Clip 22.
I know a snow job when I see it, Amanda. And so does Mr. Kroger.
Sydney, this whole business is snow jobs. Blizzards of snow jobs. You just tossed out our whole profit margin. And Craig, how could you allow her to run those numbers? Of all the lame brain things you have done, this one takes the cake.
I don't have to listen to this.
No, you're going to fix it. Fix it, or I swear to God, I will bury you both.
You'd think, and yet...
You would.
This is not what occurs, which is strange. So outside, Craig tells Sydney he would tell Amanda to fuck off, but she owns half of his only asset, which, yeah, that was my point a second ago. But mm-hmm. Sydney ignores that to say maybe their time has come right now, today. They could start a new agency and put Amanda out of business. Hey, you should probably figure out not to offer clients work at cost before you try to do that. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Also, what?
Yeah. Oh, God.
It and only also, gets... who would go with you over Amanda? Like, this is another problem. Like, it's Amanda. Mm-hmm. It's Heather Locklear. Mm. Look at those legs. Come on.
It gets so much dumber from here. We'll come back to it.
It so does.
But then we're at the Ojai Grill where Allison's complaining that Jake is ignoring all the work that needs doing inside so that he can mess with the basketball net on the patio. Why is this here? Take it down and make room for more tables, you stoop. But Jake says there's an issue with the paperwork, so they'll have to spend the night, and Allison gets pissy about it. Clip 23.
You want to tell me what's on your mind?
Yeah. Yeah, look at this place, Jake. It's a dump.
Yeah. It is now. But it's a little work.
You sold shooters. You pulled up stakes. All for a broken down wide space in the road.
No, for a dream. Our dream.
No, your dream. It's never my dream any more than a family was. I'll tell you what's going to happen. We are going to rot here just like that backboard. Don't you get it? Dreams aren't what life is made of. Dreams are what disappointment is made of. The bike shop, the charter boat, shooters. This is just another in a long line of failures.
Why are you saying this now?
I guess I just can't fool myself the way you can. Self-delusion isn't in my blood.
Well, I'm signing those papers. With or without you.
It'll be without me. I'm going home.
You want to tell me what's on your mind?
I know what's on your mind.
All right, have you seen my new Chainsaw Hussy mask? Sure seems like Allison's pulling a Harry and the Hendersons on old Jake. I've seen this move before.
Yeah. I do admire that all of his previous fuck-ups have been exhumed for these purposes, but also this is their last episode.
Yeah,
both of them. Like,
yes.
Do we have to do it like this?
I know it's only, and again, I'll say it again, it only gets worse from here too, and more cruel to both these characters that we've been watching since day one, since day minus two in Jake's case.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and in Jake's case, like, he was such a butt this season that I actually don't hate Allison ripping him six new ones at the wide place in the road, which I was about to be like, it's Ojai, not the halfway cafe, but Ojai. I just looked it up. It actually is fairly small, but still.
Yeah.
Also, you want to tell me what's on your mind?
And by the way, after as well, all that talk in the last episode about Jake selling shooters to the right person, it's cool that whoever did buy it, we never know who it was. Back in L.A., night has fallen. Amanda's back at the jazz club, ordering Kyle to forget everything that happened between them at the opening. She says he's a single man. He can see whomever he wants. She neither has nor wants any say in the matter. And right on cue, Jennifer yells out that Kyle has a call in his office. When he has gone, she saunters over to take Amanda's order, then check that Amanda and Kyle aren't involved. Amanda says it's strictly business. Kyle used that phrase exactly, says Jennifer, and also blabbed about Amanda being celibate. Jennifer says she couldn't last a week, never mind. Well, how long has it been for Amanda? And wearily, Amanda says she can tell why Kyle's fling with Jennifer was so short-lived. Not short-lived, but, you know, pièce de résistance. I guess we are grading on a curve.
Pièce de résistance.
Yes. So Jennifer delights in saying they were together for 5 months and fucked all over Boston, including in the alley behind Kyle's East, which, like, you could have left that detail out, but whatever.
Yeah, I didn't. Thanks for the F. coli.
Yeah, so that leads to this, clip 24.
Actually, if there was a word for the opposite of celibate, that would have been us.
Oh, but there is a word, Jennifer. It's tramp.
you know.
I mean, I don't agree with the sentiment, no. But the delivery, sparkling.
Indeed. And again, if you're saying, like, we fucked in an alley, you know, what are you expecting except to be called an alley cat? Sorry. Mm. But after Amanda's departed, Kyle returns to ask where she went. And as Jennifer is claiming that Amanda got paged, Amanda drifts back into the doorway to watch as Jennifer straightens Kyle's tie and pets his chest in a very possessive way. And then it's the next day, and Amanda's having a bad day at work. Clip 25.
Well, Ted Kroger jumped ship. And worse, it's some fly-by-night operation I've never even heard of. Sky High Advertising. I mean, what idiot names an agency Sky High Advertising?
I kind of like it. Sky's the limit and all that. And would you look at this logo?
Sky High Advertising is ours, Amanda. Sydney and mine. We're going out on our own.
Oh, but first, one minor detail.
We quit. And to anyone who wants to join us, we are offering a 20% raise.
Medical and dental included, of course.
You're raiding your own agency.
Oh, not to worry, Amanda. You can have my half of D&D. In a week, it should be worth, well, exactly nothing. Anyways, who's going to be the first to sign up?
Think before you leap, people. These imbeciles have no clients, no offices, just a bad name and a worse logo.
Amanda.
No, Billy, let her talk. It's great.
You walk out of here today and you can never come back. You'll be dead at D&D. Dead in this industry.
Just so you all know, our door is always open. Except for tyrants, of course. Come on, Sydney.
What is this, Norma Ray? Get back to work.
Okay. First of all, go to the visual aids to see the logo because it looks like absolute shit. And I don't know who they got on Fiverr to design it in the last 12 hours.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, like... They have no money. Like, they're both broke.
Yeah.
She has 50 grand, I guess. Or 40 grand.
And medical and dental, like, you're betting pretty heavily on the whole HR department to right. go from the business balcony to wherever you are.
Yes.
Which you don't, like, all you have is a logo, and the logo is ass.
You have a logo, you have one client who you are already on record as saying you're going to probably undercharge for the work.
I mean, first of all, word will get around that you pulled this.
Yeah.
Second of all, the fuck does Sydney know about advertising?
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
She wears cute outfits. Like, I guess that's not nothing, but... Mm-hmm. And also, you can't just quit.
No.
A concern you own 50% of. That's not how this works.
No, it's not. And also...
Nobody would pay any attention to this because it's Amanda. Like, the whole, you know, we've been driving towards, like, the breakdown of Amanda's reign of blah, blah, blah. Like, no, not credible.
No.
Never credible. Also no. not credible, her breakup with Peter.
Well, yes. I mean, I have I have so much more to say about the logistics of this new agency, but we'll get to it. So that night, we find out good old Colleen is still in town and about to do a favor for Allison, who has apparently switched from vodka to cocaine based on her manner in this clip. Clip 26. Yeah.
Oh, great. You're here. I really, really appreciate this, Colleen. Jake and I had this huge fight up in Ohio, and I drove off in a huff, completely forgetting that I had all his escrow papers in the back of my car. And I'd take him to him himself, but it's still too weird, and he really, really needs them. I thought maybe you could take David, that it might be fun for him. I mean, for both of you.
Allison, I gotta say, I am really confused. A couple days ago, you show up at my door drunk, with all these questions about Jake, if I still care about him.
Just silly jealousy.
No. It was more than that. And now this obvious ruse to get David and I up to Ojai.
What, you think I'm trying to push the two of you together?
Well, are you?
No. No, but even if I were, would that be so terrible? You said you still care about him. I do remember that much. What if the way were suddenly clear? What would you do?
I don't know.
I do. I think that you'd jump at the chance. Because you've been around enough to know that opportunities like this rarely come along once in a lifetime, much less twice.
Look, Allison,
I think we've said enough, don't you?
Here are the papers. You decide what you want to do with them.
I have a couple suggestions.
Boy.
Write a plot that makes sense on them and then light them on fire and shove them up your ass.
The only way they have been laying track for this, other than Jake being terrible, is every time he's like, let's do this. And Allison will be like, okay. And then we see her over his shoulder looking conflicted. That's the only thing that has made this make any kind of sense.
Yeah.
Is that, like, it's just been compromise after compromise on her side.
Yeah. Well, and I just, like, you know, what Jake has always wanted is a family. It's like, no, what he always wanted was a pool that he could fix his bike next to.
Yes.
And then their way of, like, sort of laying the groundwork for this for his character was to turn him into a complete controlling Falwell when she was pregnant. Like, that's not how you do this.
Yeah, Jake wanting a trad wife is brand new this season for sure. Like, it really did not align. Anyway, back to more preposterous storyline. The next day, Craig and Sydney are giddily checking out Sky High's new office space. Now, they have not had time to create a corporation. It's this is one day after they told Amanda they were doing this, and 2 days after they decided to do it. Who is signing this lease on the space? Mm-hmm. Who is paying for it? Like, it's so big. It's so silly. I'm begging both of them to put someone else in charge of buying insurance for it, by the way. Mm-hmm. Season has taught us neither of them can handle it.
Yep.
Craig presents Sydney with a partnership agreement from where? Don't know. What lawyer is he not paying to do this? She is slightly deflated that he wants to bring the law into this. And when she unfolds the paperwork, she finds plane tickets. Clip 27.
Round trip to Las Vegas. There are wedding chapels in every corner. Oh, yeah, and this comes along with it.
A ring.
Would you marry me, Sydney? You know, all this ruining Amanda and starting the agency. It would be so many hollow victories if you didn't say yes.
Yes. Yes, I'm saying yes. Oh. Just one little thing. One teeny weeny thing. Instead of Vegas, could we have a big wedding? You know, flowers, dress, gifts. I mean, of course, if that's what you want.
And be the biggest party you've ever seen.
One final request, and then I promise I'll stop. Can I rip your clothes off and make savage love to you?
Since when have you ever had to ask?
I don't know.
It's a shame because they're actually kind of cute.
They are. They are cute. However,
there is like a mush mouth madcap thing happening that I don't hate.
Yes. I don't know who she thinks, and this is about to be a plot point too, but who is she inviting to her big wedding? Like, she has no friends. Like, are you inviting the crooked lawyer? Are you inviting your sister or parents? Because, spoiler, we don't see any of them at the big event.
No. Well, maybe they were taking the bus, and for obvious reasons... We'll get to it. Yeah, the geography of that final sequence is very confusing to me. We'll talk about it in a second.
Anyway, speaking of rings, please go to the visual aids to see the one that is quite improbably on Jake's right ring finger as he signs the final paperwork at the Ojai Grill. Talk about out of character.
Very David Silver, too.
Yes, weird. It is. Yes. Colleen is also there agreeing with Jake that it's weird Allison hasn't returned. Clip 28.
Yeah, I thought we'd reached the perfect compromise. I agreed to live without kids. She agreed to move up here.
Okay. What? This is the problem with their relationship in a nutshell. It's like, you think compromises, we'll both do something we hate.
Yeah.
We'll be happy for sure. No.
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 No. Also, the kid decision was not a decision so much as she got drunk and fucked you over. And, I mean, he did too, but he's not the alcoholic.
Yeah.
Anyway, Colleen also has thoughts. Speaking of drinking, clip 29.
The drinking might explain some of it. I mean, even the way she asked me to bring these pages up.
Yeah. It's like she had some kind of agenda. I thought about not signing until I figured it out, but I love this place. I love the idea of making it work.
Of course it'll work. Fresh coat of paint, new curtains, maybe even a better sign out front. Take it from me. Everybody will be coming from all over to eat at Jake's.
Hey, there's your sign. Eat at Jake's.
No! No new sign!
No.
No new sign.
No.
The sign is the only thing I like in this plotline. Honestly.
No. Oh my God. Also, really, curtains?
Mm.
In the restaurant industry. Okay.
As Colleen bustles off in search of a broom, Jake looks out to see David shooting baskets. Colleen asks what's wrong, but that's just it, Jake says. Nothing's wrong. Allison, you've done it again. Back in L.A., Amanda storms into Kyle's. She needs to get all her money out of the club, and she can't tell him why. Obviously, he has spent that money on the stuff inside the club, and Amanda loses it, accusing him of making her beg. When she babbles that she's losing the company, he points out that she'll still have half a jazz club and an apartment complex, and she snits that it was a mistake coming there, storms out right past Jennifer and her big bag of oysters, randomly. Kyle is totally unconcerned.
Band name called it.
Kyle's totally unconcerned about everything Amanda just said and cheerfully accedes to Jennifer's request for a shrimp cocktail. And that night, it's about time to... business, 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 like we've never business before. Because you know how Amanda's partner and one employee of less than a week's tenure started a competing firm with $0 in capital and one client 2 days ago? Well, now D&D is finished. Clip 30.
We've got one small client left, Lindy Toys. As far as our employees go, you're pretty much down to no one. So much for loyalty.
This is not over until there are no clients and no employees. Even then, as long as I'm alive and kicking, this place still exists.
I mean, I think we're supposed to think Amanda's such a bitch that everyone was like, I'm gonna just leap into a chasm rather than continue to work for her. But like, who are these morons who left for jobs at a company with no payroll? Like, even if they do get $10 million out of this Mr. Kroger, he's gonna pay them for it like months from now.
Yeah.
Like, Amanda still has months worth of receivables at her agency. Who are these accountants who are like, it's dead immediately? Like, again, these companies are not hardware stores. Like, it's not like they got even a hardware store you couldn't bust out overnight.
Well, and all these people, like, they didn't take their last paychecks from D&D either. Like, they just left.
Yes.
And they vacuumed.
Yes.
And they,
yes,
like, dusted their yes monitors, cleaned, yes, everything off the desk.
Yes.
The business balcony,
yes,
is empty. Everything is neat as a pin.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to show, except for one dude.
Yeah.
Who's got some shit to say.
There's not a scrap of paper. There's not a paper clip.
No.
Like, they took every single thing that was not nailed down in this office and,
yeah,
departed. Like,
the fucking Roscoe the bedbug beagle just left. Like, it is clean.
Roscoe. It's a nice
reference. Roscoe. He's working.
Love Roscoe.
Not at D&D, he's not.
No, never mind any of that. So when Amanda stalks out, the only person left is Billy, as Sarah said, and Amanda comments on being able to count on him, which A, assumes she can, and B, it's not actually a thank you for his sticking around as she thinks he has done. And then she launches right in. They still have one client left, so the two of them need to start working on it, but uh-oh, clip 31.
I'm sorry. Today's my last day. I start at Sky High Advertising tomorrow.
You ungrateful bastard. A few more bucks in the envelope and poof, you're out the door? After all I've done for you?
After all you've done for me? For 4 years, you've treated me like dirt. All right, you stepped on me, ridiculed me.
I relied on you.
Yeah, you relied on me, all right, to be your number one chump.
Fine. Get out of here and leave your keys on the reception desk.
It didn't have to be this way, Amanda.
Number one chump.
No, it didn't. Because it couldn't be this way, because
no,
this is not how anything works.
No, it's not.
In the background, waxing the floor, It's Chris. I mean, why not?
Back at the complex, Jake lets himself into his place to discover a white jeans party taking place on the couch. Specifically, Allison's passed out on some dude with several empty bottles in front of them. When Jake angrily advances, the guy says he's just a friend and does not resist Jake throwing him out. Jake then turns his rage on Allison. Has she completely lost her mind? People enjoy drunk Allison while you can, because she's so close to the exit. Clip 32.
Look, Jake, not everyone can be as righteous as you are. Maybe I just wanted to get off the dream team for a night and have a little fun. You know, all work and no play does make Jake a dull.
Shut up! I begged you. I begged you not to drink anymore. And look, what, you bring some guy here? You bring some pig into our apartment?
You know what? Why don't you just throw me out? I'm going to go to Amanda's.
No, I'll leave. I got to get away from the stench in this place.
Wow. Also, second pig of the episode. Gosh.
I'm glad he got to throw one more thing instead of dealing with his emotions like a big boy.
Indeed.
Not really?
Also, it's your place. Like, you're going to have to clean that up later. But anyway, after Jake is stormed out.
That's an excellent point.
The phone rings. It's that dude calling from his car on his cellular phone. Clip 33.
I was worried.
Yeah, I'm okay. He left.
That's what you wanted, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it worked.
You know, being an AA has had its challenges, but helping you out of this one has got to take the cake. Pretending to be drunk. I'll tell you, it's scary how quickly it came back.
Yeah, well, you did me a big favor. This doesn't push me away. I don't know what will.
Okay, two things. One, I thought practicing rigorous honesty was one of the main tenets of AA, but shows what I know, I guess. But second...
Yeah, I think this is well outside the bounds of the sponsor brief, but shows what I know.
Yeah. The second thing is, I know they couldn't do this in order to sell the illusion, but I love the idea, now that we know they were faking, that the two of them were just like... casually chatting on the couch, and then they like heard right? the key and were like, shit, pretend to be asleep, like immediately.
Oh my god, I kind of wish that they had shown like the before, that yes. They're just like, person, place, or thing, place. Is it in this time zone? No. I mean, why not? Like,
yes.
More interesting and credible than anything else that's happening.
No kidding. And then... oh, no. Amanda's pulling up outside Lindy Toys, yelling that she needs to get in there and talk to Mr. Lindy, but he's gone and they're about to lock up. But her whole business depends on this meeting. And suddenly she's overcome with some kind of attack, gasping and yelling. And the next morning, she's somehow being treated by Peter. He tells her it wasn't a heart attack. She hyperventilated and passed out, probably due to stress. She angrily denies any psychological issues. She just forgot to take her vitamin and skip lunch. Okay. And the EMTs also apparently wrote down all her hysterical threats, which is rude of them. And when she sheepishly admits that she's losing the advertising agency and that he and his doctor consortium once owned, never forget, he shrugs that that's great. She should focus on the club or take time off. And she snits that he didn't ask for his opinion and tries to leave, but he makes her wait for the specialist and then rudely comments that she hasn't gotten any flowers or visitors. So again, underlining the Amanda's a bitch and this is why all of this has happened to her. I don't buy it, but that's what we're trying to be. Sold.
I don't either. I also don't buy that they don't want to get back together because, yeah. Like, visible chemistry. Mm-hmm. Why, show? Mm-mm. Why? Mm.
Back at the complex, Colleen and David come looking for Jake, but Allison has to say he stayed at a motel the previous night. I guess he, after having that huge fight, called and was like, here's where I am. Whatever. Colleen asks to use Allison's phone to call him while David just loiters outside. Allison thought he would be in Hawaii by now. He shrugs that things just keep coming up, which is fine with him since it means he gets to spend more time with Jake. Colleen told David not to tell Jake how much David was going to miss him because it wouldn't be fair to Jake, which, what?
Fuck
Jake
him.
Is an adult. Like, yeah. I think that's an okay thing for a child to say to a person, never mind their biological parent they're just getting to know. Like, it's all right to say you're going to miss someone. weird.
Anyone can say it to anyone. Yes. If they're not being manipulative. People need to learn to manage their sad feelings sometimes.
Yes,
Jake.
They do. Right. Allison says the Pattersons don't actually need to go to Hawaii if that's not what they want, because their staying might be what Jake wants. And if David doesn't ask, they'll never know. And all of that is not okay to say to a child, by the way, but that's what happens.
Yeah.
And it's not until that night that Kyle comes to visit Amanda at the hospital. He's been to the bank and can take a loan out on the club to get her cash back to her.
LOL.
Please tell me what that bank is so I can go open an account. Like, this club has been open for 5 days. Like, they have no record to run on. What the fuck?
Oh, God. Fucking infernal tootlings and loan. What?
The finance. Yes. So then they argue about whether she was being too demanding or if he was being too macho. His opinion is that her armor against vulnerability has left her alone in the world. Oh, he's giving her a lot to think about.
Shut up.
Seriously. Back at the newlyweds' place, Jake is making it much easier for all of us to say goodbye to him in clip 34.
Did you want to get caught? Booze behind the sink. Drunk here in the apartment. But do you think you can get away with that?
I guess it just wasn't the issue.
You just wanted to break us up any way you could.
Subconsciously, maybe that's true. The point is, it's over. Jake, I could never be who you want me to be. That's gotta be pretty obvious by now. I'm sorry.
Are you?
I said some pretty mean things about your dreams.
We're right about all of
them.
Just
because they aren't mine doesn't mean they're not good dreams. I do hope they come true for you.
This really hurts.
Maybe you better go.
Are you going to get some help?
Already working on it.
Allison.
Jake, don't. Don't ever mistake pity for love. Go to Ohio.
Absolutely no reason for any of this.
She
could have just divorced him and been like, I'm moving to Atlanta because it seems fun.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Sorry.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why we had to. I agree. I don't know why we had to go through all of this, because like, if she was trying to test him to be like, if I try my hardest to push him away, is he going to say, what I really want is you? It's why I married you. All of this other stuff doesn't matter. And he doesn't. So I guess, you know, that proves she was right, but it's still a real long walk to get there.
Yeah. And I mean, how much of a cock was Grant Cho behind the scenes that this is how they do him on the last episode of his tenure?
Anyway, then it's the next day. Jake is walking David out of the hotel, promising they can keep in touch and see each other often. David asks why Jake's always saying goodbye to him. He wants to go to Ojai with Jake and for Colleen to come as well. And she has told David that she wants to, again, not okay to say to a kid.
No, leave David out of it. And I will say here that this actor is being written like 4 to 6 years younger than the actor.
Agreed.
Is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And even if it were age appropriate, it is garbage dialogue. But this actor is really good.
Mm-hmm.
In this plot line that I despise everything about except them. So good job.
Yes, agree. So David ends by telling Jake he loves him and throwing himself at him, begging him not to leave again, which is when Colleen comes out and Jake decides to go ahead and have this incredibly adult conversation in front of David. Jake claims that his dream has been standing right in front of him this whole time. Hey, I have a question. Do you love this woman, or do you want to raise her kid and she's part of the package? Like, seriously, but...
I mean, obviously she's willing to enable him because he showed up drunk at her house, tried to, like, horn in on a family that he turned his back on, and ran over her literal picket fence, and she was like, it's fine, have some pie. Like, okay, you know what?
Yeah.
Go to Ojai, don't come back here. I'm sick of all of you, except
seriously.
You, David.
Yeah. Well, no time to interrogate any of that, because, yes, of course, Colleen and David will go to Ojai with Jake, and from the parking lot, Allison watches her sacrifice pay off for everyone except her. And at Sky High, Sydney's spinning out because she and Craig sent out all their wedding invitations and haven't gotten one RSVP yet. One, you got engaged 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. Two, neither of you has any money to pay for any wedding, never mind a big one. But Craig states that everyone at Sky High will attend or lose their jobs. I hope you're planning to have this event before they all notice they haven't gotten paid yet. But Sydney only cares about her neighbors. Billy gets the office. Craig gives him the corner office on condition of being Craig's best man. Clip 35.
That's nice, Craig, but sure you wouldn't rather have one of your college buddies?
That's my old life, my father's life. This is the beginning of a new dynasty, and you could be a big part of it.
I don't know. I just...
Billy, I'm your boss. What do you want me to do, order you to be my best man?
Oh, good thing Billy quit, because he didn't want a tyrannical boss. Anyway, he agrees. And then our old friend Guy, the redhead, is about to show Billy to his office when he remembers he has a letter for Billy from Allison. Billy quickly reads it, suspension of disbelief in full effect, and rushes out. And then Billy's finding Allison just before she gets on a plane. She is divorcing Jake and moving to, as Sarah said, Atlanta. For no reason. She just said the Olympic spirit and all that. Like okay.
There was a bombing and then someone was falsely accused. Cool. Very, also, very soapy choice. Also, what?
Also, it was a year ago. Like, really? Okay. But anyway, she corrects Billy. She and Jake are divorcing each other. What matters is that Jake is finally going to be happy. He is so stubborn, he sometimes can't see what's right in front of his face, so Allison just had to point it out. And that's seriously all the explanation that we get. So Billy's gonna miss Allison and their friendship. He tries to get her to take a later flight, but that'll just make everything harder and her mind's made up, to which he says, clip 36.
This is weird, you know? I'm always a step behind. Life's just whizzing by and I can't seem... catch up. And when I do, it's too late. What is that?
You're slow, my guy. I don't know what we can tell you. You've been saying it all along.
Yeah. Maybe if you selected the correct face more often, things would be easier.
Yeah.
For you.
So Allison, getting emotional, says they can be pen pals, and then it's time for her to go. And they agree that they'll miss each other and have a big hug and then a real kiss. And Billy watches Allison on the jetway. And she definitely looks like she's crying for real. I think he even did a little bit. And this was the actual goodbye scene for her. Like, whatever they were trying to do with Jake and her clearly did not work. But this does seem like both of the actors were actually emotional in the moment. And it's sweet, even if it's stupid.
Yeah. I mean, Courtney Thorne-Smith was always a pro, even when the show was in over its head with whatever it gave her to do.
Yep.
She was rad, and I will also add, one of the few characters in Starverse who knows how to dress for a fucking cross-country flight.
Yes, like, great
flat
note.
Flat shoes on, those jeans don't look too tight, like, she's all set.
Yep.
So, yay, Allison. Good
indeed. Luck. So then we're back at the Ojai Grill by night. Colleen calls her hungry guys in from the basketball court for dinner. David really loves it there, he tells Jake. Allison was right when she told him to tell Jake what he wanted. Oops, she didn't tell you to say that part, dude. And Jake becomes the latest character in this episode to realize he's been played, but apparently he's fine with it because this is his last scene. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Like, they hold on him and he just looks like, he's like, should I try to burp or is it going to be like a little bit of a verb? Like, this is the face.
Yeah.
Like, and then that's a wrap on Mr. Show. Like, okay.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Then it's time for the fucking wedding. Kyle enters with Jennifer, but then tells her to quit hanging on his arm. She's not his date. They just carpooled. Matt decides that Sydney's walk down the aisle is the right time to tell Kyle and Jennifer that he's the new manager at the complex. Amanda's moving to New York. Unfortunately, the speak now or forever hold your peace coincides with Kyle's realization that he needs to stop Amanda from leaving the state right now. So he awkwardly has to clarify he's fine with this marriage proceeding. And
Jennifer is making these faces. Oh, my God. I mean, that, like, I must say, I'm in support of everyone who is like, we don't know what the fuck is happening here, but we're going to make our own fun.
Yes.
Calabro, Milano, like, yep. Oh, my Jersey and Brooklyn people. Trying to make it work. Good job.
So Kyle makes it back to the complex just as Amanda's struggling down her stairs with her two giant suitcases and begs her not to go. He needs her. He thinks she needs him too. And then he walks off and she exhaustedly tells him to wait, admits that she needs him too. She might have been able to ignore it if she didn't want him so much. Well, she had him months ago, he says, and they kiss. He carries her back up to the stairs, leaving her luggage in the courtyard. It's all her stuff, but fine. I guess she doesn't care.
Sure.
Because they're finally going to fuck with the apartment door wide open, by the way.
Sure.
Remember the Rileys? 50 years ago, somehow they did manage to exit the store with the cash, and Sam is weaving through traffic. Jim directs her to an on-ramp. He plans to get over the border with her. Guy, again, you just got back. And she bleats at him to take the car and leave her out of it. She will not let him control her anymore or blame her for whatever. And Jim calls Billy a jerk and orders her to turn, but she says Billy's at a church that they are currently approaching. Just a note that Sam is supposedly good enough friends with Sydney to crash with her after a fight with Billy, but not good enough either to get invited to Sydney's wedding or, if she was invited, to try to get off work for it.
Right.
Just had to note but, that.
And also, it's at night.
Yeah, nighttime wedding. Mm-hmm.
Right next to a bus stop.
Yes.
LOL.
So Jim can let Sam out and go wherever he wants. She pulls over and says there's nowhere he could take her that would make her stop loving Billy. And he is creepily petting her hair when cop cars come screaming around the corner. And so he puts his foot down on the gas, fighting Sam over the wheel. Guys, we're almost at the end. At the church, the wedding party comes out for nighttime photos. Love to see it. And I guess
super flattering. Yep.
Not showing a couple's vows is a motif of season 5 because we didn't see them here either. And the photographer pulls Sydney out for some poorly lit shots by herself. Back to the car. Cops pull up alongside Sam and order her to pull over. Sam and Jim continue struggling. Jennifer asks to be the first to kiss the groom inappropriately, so watch this space, I suppose. And then the nearest cop car starts bumping Sam's to force it to the side of the road, and then she's careening out of control through the aforementioned bus shelter right into the bride. And once again, an actor who is not up for it is being asked to emote a lot. Clip 37.
No!
Somebody no. Call an ambulance!
Sydney. No. Oh my God.
Sam.
No.
Oh my God. Sam. Open.
Oh my God. Hey,
somebody help me get this door open.
Please.
Somebody help me here.
Oh my God. She's dead.
It just reminds me of, I forget the actor's name, but she, in National Lampoon's European Vacation, where it's like that sped up sequence of them seeing all the museums and she swoons the daughter and the Rusty's like, are you happy now, Dad? She's dead. Like, oh my God. Oh God. I should clip that.
Oh my God. Well, that's the season. Wow. I mean, I'm sad that Sydney's not going to be in our lives anymore. I am glad, as Sarah said, that, you know, Jennifer seems like she's a decent replacement in her way. Mm,
yeah.
And
I think Alyssa Milano understands the assignment.
For sure.
Oh.
All right. We got some MVP and LVPs to dish out. Let's start with the episode MVP. I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning and say Denise. Even though she did it in the shittiest possible way and wasted a lot of people's time, she did finally realize she is not a fit parent and gave Chelsea the best possible chance.
I'm going to say Michael because I mean, he sort of got what he wanted until it got screwed up. And he also seemed to understand that he was on a soap. I mean, I don't know. Everyone's kind of terrible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the end? Okay. Yes, mm-hmm. they are.
Yeah, not a lot to choose from. What's my point?
Okay. Least valuable player. Jim finally killed someone. At least one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jim just like on GPs, but, of credits cast, Jake.
Yeah. Yeah. And the writers, like, because a lot of exits were not planned well.
Yeah. And we're just disrespectful. Like even 90210 could do better than this.
It's true.
Not much.
Who wrote this?
I mean,
yeah. All right. Now for the season, who is our season MVP? It's tempting to say someone who left.
Yeah, it is. I thought about saying Jane because she just wasn't here, didn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's also tempting to say Chris, who, as far as we know, is still eluding justice.
It's true.
Handsomely in the middle of the desert.
I'm going to say the gala committee. They did a lot of fun stuff. It was neat to dig back into it. And I'm glad I got that book because it's very cool.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Season LVP. I really hated the gym plot line. It was.
Yeah, me too.
It was
so let's say Casa Riley because.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, she's bad too. That's a good call. Oh, boy, we did it.
Oh, my God. We did. Okay, so next time on Again With This, Season 6, Rise of the Scrubbinis. We'll find out who lived, who died, who's getting blamed, who's getting married, and whether any of it is worse than jazz. In the meantime, why not infernally tootle on over to our visual aids? You could find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. You can join the Patreon fun at patreon.com/againwiththis. And you can call or text us anytime at 210-920-4699. And please do so. We've got another call-in episode coming up. If you have winter holiday adjacent thoughts on the Starverse, we'd love to hear those. But if you just want to wail, it's Billy, onto someone's voicemail and your significant others are sick of it, we are here for you for that too. Once again, it's 210-920-4699. I'm Bad Language Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is classic reverse psychologist Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Peace Day Resistance, David D. Cole. Talk to you next time.
You want to tell me what's on your mind?
But mostly it was just, you know, crazy talking bad language.
Kiss my butt.
Rock bottom.
Yes!
Oh, my God.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Are you missing the sounds that matter most? What if you could hear every word, every laugh, and every moment crystal clear without spending thousands on expensive hearing aids? Introducing Audionatum, the world's most affordable FDA-approved hearing aid. With the revolutionary A2 chip, you get premium sound, zero background noise, and a 24-hour rechargeable battery. They even have Bluetooth connectivity to connect to your cell phone or TV. Unlike those traditional bulky $5,000 prescription hearing aids, the Audionatum is 90% smaller, 20 times cheaper, and works instantly. No visits to the audiologist needed. Audionatum has over 500,000 happy customers who have trusted Audionatum to restore their hearing. Our 100% money-back guarantee means zero risk to try. Don't like them? Simply return them and get your money back. They also come with a lifetime warranty. For the next 72 hours, the Audionatum is 53% off. Go to tryhearingaid.com right now to order your pair for only $99. Again, go to tryhearingaid.com to order your pair for only $99. Order now before it's too late, as these hearing aids have sold out over 10 times this year. With Audie and Adam, you can hear life again.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.